Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for High Velocity Radio.
Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, where we celebrate top performers producing better results in less time. Stone Peyton, Lee Cantor here with you today. Lee, we've known about this one for a while. I know you've been very excited about it. I'm looking forward to listening in. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast, Miss Vicky Ascara. How are you, Vicky?
I'm doing great. Good morning, gentlemen. How are both of you?
We are doing great. Now, Vicky, you are right now working with Opportunity International. Can you talk a little bit about them?
Oh, certainly. So, Lee, I am the global CEO of Opportunity International, which is an organization that operates as a social enterprise. We are a nonprofit. I often think that we operate like a corporation in that we provide loans, savings, and training to over 10 million people around the world, 22 countries. The average loan is about $240. And the important part of all that is not just to provide people living in poverty with money, but to make sure they know how to use it effectively and that they can go about creating a job. So the really powerful part about this organization, we have a goal of 20 million jobs by 2020. We're at 18 million. But all of the loans are paid back. 98.5% are paid back. And so it's a really interesting business model and really helps create a better world.
Now, this the business model around microfinance, I guess microfinance is relatively new in, I guess, using the words microfinance, but people have been lending money for quite some time. Can you talk about how maybe people aren't familiar with how microfinance works and how an individual can actually participate in making some of these loans?
Sure. So, you know, lending has been around since the beginning of time. The interesting thing about microfinance is it works really well in the developing world where, you know, an average loan, as I said, of about $240 makes a huge difference. So you can take that amount of loan and start a small business. If you repay the loan on time, we will increase the loan up to, we have some loans now with clients who've been with us for 10, 15 years that are $10,000, $15,000, $20,000. But the focus behind it is the collateral, if you will, primarily resides today. It's moving in group activities. So we could be in a group and are required as an entry part into this group to present a business plan around how we will use the money. If I don't pay my loan back, then the members of my group are required to pay it back. So that is how you get such high repayment rates, because it is really about community. And these members in these organizations and the 22 countries that we work in will not let their sisters and brothers in their communities down. They will pay the loan back or find a way to pay it back.
Right, because they understand it's so important in order to keep that money flowing in the community.
Absolutely. Yes. So, you know, you pay it back, and then that, along with the savings that our institutions are involved in, allows us to almost triple the amount of money that we deploy in communities. As an example, last year, we deployed $1.5 billion across the world, primarily, as I said, to people that are living right at the poverty line.
And then these people who are getting the loans, it may not be like in America, you might think, oh, they're getting a loan for their business. But in some of these countries, the loan might be like for a cell phone or a goat, right? Like it's not...
It could...
Is that true?
Yep. That is true. It could be to get a cell phone, to then start a business. Most of our loans, and we track them, we do impact studies on what happens with the people that are provided loans. You know, are their lives improved? Are they growing businesses? What are they using the money for? Are their kids in school? Are they moving up in their community and seen as leaders? So it could be for a goat, which may produce, milk and or food for their family. But it's a way of exchanging and providing commerce to people that otherwise wouldn't have the ability to be involved in the global economy.
Now, when you're going out and finding people to give the loans to, how does that work? Like, how do these people in these villages around the world even know that this is available to them?
Interesting question. So we are so involved in the community. We work right now through about 15,000 people that are actually on the ground in these communities. So they're well known. Case in point, we work with 15 microfinance institutions in India. We work all over India, and it's in some of the poorest parts of the world. But our trust officers and loan officers are really community advisors. And so they're very well known in the communities, seen as leaders, seen as counselors, if you will. And so we have, quite frankly, more demand than we can handle. And so that's how we go about doing our work.
It sounds like it's almost like here, like the movie, It's a Wonderful Life, where it's back when the people knew the individuals and they were trusting them and their word was their bond. And is that what it sounds like to you?
It's interesting you say that, because when you think back to banking, even in the United States 100 years ago, you know, the small community banks were where everyone went to bank. And, you know, if you had difficulty paying a loan back, then your neighbor would help you. And so that is exactly what this is about. It's a very good example of why it has been so successful and why it is really helping, again, back to this notion of job creation. You can get money, but you know, making the best use of that money and creating jobs is really what we're interested in, because that helps eliminate generational poverty in some of these countries. And it actually helps people feel more involved and connected, good about themselves, good for their communities. So when I talk about 20 million jobs, if you think about the impact of one job, it probably affects 10 people. So 20 million jobs affects millions of people, north of 100 million people, because of the benefits and associations affiliated with buying product to create the job, the family members that are involved, all of the side effects that are involved in that job creation.
And the role modeling of that behavior for the future generations to see that it is possible and that you can make something happen. You're not kind of a victim to the circumstance. You have some control over it.
Exactly. So I was just in Nicaragua a month ago seeing the graduation of some of our students. We have school there. In fact, we have 500 schools around the world that we sponsor and fund, or they fund themselves through our loans. And I've been watching this one young man, to your point, over the last 5 years, come into school. He was kicked out of the public schools because he was a troublemaker. His mother asked that we take him. We did, a bit so reluctantly. But he was so bright that he was actually bored in the public schools. He ended up being the president of his class. He just graduated with honors. His name is Roger. And he's off to the university. So that is the impact that this kind of work can happen. One child at a time, one person at a time, that's the impact.
Now, prior to this, you were the CMO at Delta Airlines Global. What made you kind of switch gears and go into the nonprofit sector?
So that's a great question. And, you know, Shirley Franklin, who was the mayor at the time and a very good friend, asked if I would help her right after I left Delta. So I was there through 9/11, was actually promoted in the chief marketing job a week before 9/11. So interesting timing with regard to all of that. but stayed 3 years beyond and then intended to take a year off, but went into doing some work with Mayor Franklin. And I would tell you, she was very influential in talking to me about the importance of using your influence where you can. As you know, she did a lot to promote education within the inner city schools and really dramatically changed the graduation rates when she was there. And in discussions with her, we had a conversation where she said, you know, Vicki, I think you've got some good skills. You've been successful at Delta. When are you going to take those skills and do something to make our world better? And in the end of the, at the end of the day, how much money is enough money? And it really stopped me in my tracks. And I started thinking back to my very modest beginnings, and immediately started interviewing for jobs, was selected to be the CEO of the third largest nonprofit in the United States, Feeding America, which is very well connected with Chicago Food Depository, with the Atlanta Community Food Bank. But we had great success there in raising awareness that there are people in our own country that are really struggling right now. And there's a lot that we can all do. And people love trying to help. Americans are so giving. And then that led to this position. So I've been really fortunate to have a lot of different life experiences and a lot of people helping me along the way, which I'm eternally grateful for.
Now, what do you think the benefits of having a CEO come from the marketing ranks rather than, you know, tech or finance?
So I think it's interesting. I think when I look back on my career, I answer the question a little bit differently because I had the good fortune of running all of the operations at Delta. So I ran in-flight, I ran airport operations, I ran call centers, cargo operations, and then I ran them all together. So, and then I moved into marketing. And so being a generalist in, I think, is the most important role for CEOs as opposed to finance or as opposed to technology or marketing. Mm-hmm. I think understanding how the various components of a company works just gives you a leg up. It's not an end all be all. I mean, really good leadership can always hire talent that can fill in those gaps. So none of us know everything. But clearly, you know, I would say understanding how to market and position an organization for success. Feeding America is a very good example. It was formerly America's Second Harvest. Nobody knew what that organization did. And so we actually went through a name change when I was there, which increased the public awareness of the organization from, at the time, it was 18%. Today, it's north of 75%. So having the right name, marketing your product, talking about your values connects greatly with our community today and with our world because people want to be involved in organizations that are doing good and giving back.
Yeah, and you're talking about, I think, social enterprise, and that is kind of a buzzword today in today's world. How do you see that evolution happening, maybe even specifically in Chicago, regarding kind of the nonprofit sector in Chicago and this combination with social enterprise? And social enterprise has expanded beyond nonprofits. You know, a lot of companies are for-profit and are social enterprises these days.
Exactly. So, you know, I would say one of the best examples of that is Unilever, which is an excellent company based out of London. And their CEO is one of the best examples of running a great corporation, which answers to the shareholders, and they've done very well. But it also has a component that's very focused on ensuring that they do good and give back. So, they partner with many organizations around the world to promote smallholder farmers, to promote education, to promote women in the developing world getting ahead, because investing in women is really a great investment. We know for every dollar that they earn, 90 cents goes back into promoting their children and their community. So I see social enterprise growing in that what we know is that donors today, more and more, are willing to give seed capital to get things started. So they're willing to give philanthropic dollars. But they also are moving in a direction of wanting to see a small return on their investment. So they want to see that something good is being done and that the organizations that are doing the work are sustainable. So this is a very big movement in philanthropy. It will continue to be a big movement because more and more millennials are coming into great wealth and they are very involved in doing good, but seeing a return for the investment, small be it, and in turn then a sustainable organization.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is an exciting time where you have this kind of combination of this, I guess, a millennial driven almost, where the mission of the company is kind of more important than the money, and they're more kind of focused on doing good instead of themselves just kind of financially trying to accumulate as much wealth as they possibly can.
I agree with you. And that is, we're seeing those trends. And in fact, I would call your attention to the World Bank, who does, along with Gates Foundation, which are great partners of ours. You know, they talk about the fact that by the year 2030, if we continue to do all the work that we're doing, not just Opportunity International, but other great organizations that are involved in the elimination of extreme poverty, so people living below $1.80 a day, if we keep doing what we're doing, by 2030, people living below that will no longer exist. Now, there'll be some pockets, obviously, always, but that has never happened in the history of mankind, and it is extraordinary, and we're all focused on trying to follow the sustainable millennium goals, which they're 17, and they ladder up to this elimination of extreme poverty, and I believe that we can get there, and it will be something for all of us to celebrate.
Now, I think the thing that's accelerating this path to getting there is this combination of getting like large enterprises along for the ride. And you were able to do that with your partnerships with Opportunity International, with some large corporations like Walmart and Chase and Kraft. How were you able to kind of get them on the team and really open up their minds and hearts and wallets to help you achieve your goals?
So great question. So I think a good example of that is Walmart. And Walmart, when we first started meeting with them, they had a tremendous amount of food that they couldn't place after it reached a certain due date, if you will. And we convinced them to allow us to take that food a day before it was due, and we could actually get it moved within a day's time and moved as effectively as they could move it. And so getting in the door, and so we moved hundreds of millions of pounds of food that otherwise would have gone in a landfill that fed families and children and elderly people. And so that was the door opening with Walmart. And now today with Feeding America, Walmart has a strategic partnership with them. They're all about ending hunger in America. They use Feeding America's brand on many of their packaging across all their stores in the U.S. and globally. And so it was finding the strategy that will work within the nonprofit, that will lift the company's profile in the community that it works in. And that is a great example. Another great example, I would say, for Opportunity is Caterpillar. They're an Illinois-based company. We know they do great work around the world. And so we have had a partnership with them for 25 years. And we are very proud to do work with them across Africa, in India, and in China, to promote entrepreneurship and promote job creation, which in turn really fills a very important role that they are focused on as far as their business on the ground in the countries they serve. So strategy has to meet across the corporations and the nonprofits for the corporations to see the value in the nonprofit.
Now, how do you have that initial conversation? Say you're a social enterprise, maybe not as large as the one that you're with, but you're in a local area, maybe you're somewhere in Illinois or Chicago, and you're a nonprofit or a social enterprise, and you want to get on the radar of a larger enterprise organization and explain to them your mission and how there's ways to work together and maybe help each other. How did those initial conversations happen, and who is the right person to have them with?
So that's a great question. My advice to small nonprofits, and they know this, is you really need to be prepared. So you need to look at the corporate prospectus. You need to understand the strategy of the company. All that information is online. You need to understand who's in charge of what area you think you've got the best fit for, depending upon what the nonprofit's focused on. And then I would suggest, to the degree possible, the most senior person in the organization, try to at least extend an invitation to the most senior person in the corporation for a meeting. It is likely that the person at the corporation will move it to a more junior person, but it opens the door. And if you open the door by saying, you know, we have a strategy to create jobs across the world, 20 million jobs by 2020, well, that opened the door for Cisco. So we have a new grant from Cisco because they're very focused on job creation. It's a $2 million grant. We're excited about it. But it is, again, matching strategy with strategy. If we weren't focused on job creation, I doubt that we would have gotten the grant with Cisco. So that is really important. Do your homework, get the right people in front of the right people, and be persistent. Just don't take no for an answer. And that's my advice.
And I would imagine it's better not to lead with charity, but like have an ROI mindset that this is something that's going to be beneficial. You'll be doing a good work, but you're also, you know, this makes sense in your business model as well.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, absolutely lead with understanding that first and foremost, corporations are in business to serve shareholders. And so the interesting thing is, over 85% of all of the citizens of the United States care about companies that have a concern about our environment and a concern about our world. So they care about socially conscious companies. But you would always lead with, this is how we can lift the brand of your company. This is how we can create additional income. This is how we can get a return on your investment dollars. Primarily, well, often it will be through marketing dollars, but oftentimes it could be through manufacturing. It could be through other operational enhancements. But always lead with a business mindset, because that's what corporate executives understand. And I think that's one reason that I would say I feel I've had success. Is corporations like to deal with people they feel like understand their business. And so going in as a former corporate executive certainly has not hurt with Feeding America or Opportunity International.
Right. I would think that that's a benefit because, you know, you've been in their chair before. You know what pains they're going through, and you know kind of the best way to reverse engineer a solution that benefits both of you.
Exactly. So they know you're not looking for a handout. They know you're looking for a partnership and for a solution to improve their business performance. And so that is what all nonprofits should be doing. Today and in the future, it's going to be more and more important to have that mindset.
Now, I guess all good things must be coming to an end. At the end of April, you'll be leaving Opportunity International as their global CEO. What made you realize that it's time, or how'd you go about deciding that this is the right time? You feel that you've left a good foundation for them for the next few years?
Totally. So you can see, I mean, I was with Delta almost 30 years, but I had 15 different jobs over that period of time. So I moved around a lot. And I had 6.5 years Feeding America, 5 years at Opportunity. So I love to go into organizations and try to figure out how to improve their performance, try to figure out what is the best strategy for helping the most people that are involved in the work. And so we've just seen unbelievable changes in this organization. We've moved the organization so that we're working together globally. And so we're, you know, we've been focused on everything reporting to a centralized function. It's allowed us to make some really important decisions, like we owned and operated 12 commercial banks in the developing world. What nonprofit would own and operate a commercial bank today?
Right.
Is a good question.
It's a short list.
We are partnering with other organizations to move into a minority share position. We've doubled the number of clients we're serving. We've sent 2 million children through school. We're assisting 250,000 smallholder farmers, and we're well on our way to 20 million jobs by 2020. So we've brought great leadership into the organization. It's a great time to transition. And I will always be a part of all the organizations that I've ever been involved with.
And then for you, next steps for you, what's on the agenda?
You know, I have intentionally said no to a number of really interesting offers because I would really like some time to reflect over the next couple of months. But I will be involved again in working. I have a couple of things in mind. Our world, as we see today with the horrible things that are happening in Syria, our world really does need people that are committed to leading and trying to make things better. And so I'm going to take a break, and then I'll be back towards the end of the summer, hopefully leading again, and look forward to that opportunity.
And next, for the next global CEO of opportunity, what do you see happening in Chicago and internationally?
So for the next, and we have now 5 CEOs and a new executive director that will be working on the strategy moving forward. So what I would say that they will be focused on is continuing to move the needle forward on the goal of ending extreme poverty by 2030. We cannot afford to take our eye off that ball. If we do, we won't get there. And I think there is a real commitment in this organization to do that, as well as to continue to achieve our goal by 2020 of job creation. I think that will continue to be a major focus of the organization because it's so good for our clients and our world to see people actively engaged and working together to make our planet a better one.
Vicki Stone-Payton here. Before we wrap, where can our listeners go to learn more about Opportunity International and maybe actually take the opportunity to get involved?
Yes, please go to our website, opportunity.org. You will find lots of information about the organization. I encourage you to learn more about us. We welcome your involvement with us. We welcome a chance to chat with you more about it. And we welcome an open invitation to go with us into country and actually see the work on the ground, because there is nothing like seeing the work on the ground that can make a real difference in really getting you hooked. So that would be my advice.
Well, Vicki Ascara, it has been an absolute delight having you on the show. Take some well-deserved time. Take a break, but come back and keep up the good work. We'll look forward to catching up with you again in the near future, because I know that you'll continue to do great and wonderful things. But this is, this has been a lot of fun, very informative, very inspiring. I can't thank you enough for joining us today.
A real pleasure, and I wish you all continued success. Look forward to talking with you about my next venture. And thanks for having me.
You are more than welcome. All right. Until next time, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor, our guest today, Vicki Ascara, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.